It's a new show, Sam. Let's start
It's called a new show. It's called The Word on the Street. And we're just going to talk about things happening in Rochester, New York every Saturday while you're driving around town. If you're listening on your iHeart Radio app, I mean, you could listen in on what we're going to talk about. We're going to have some celebrities, Rochester celebrities. We're going to have news people. We're going to have politicians. And we're going to have some new breaking things that are going on in this great, great city of Rochester, New York. And
his name is Soccer Sam.
My name is Soccer Sam Fantuzzo. He is Jeff DeVeronica from the Democratic Chronicle newspaper. I call it the DeVeronica Chronicle. And and we have in the studio our first ever guest. I created a logo for her. Her name is Rachel. Her last name is Barnhart. And you like the little...
I love it. It's so cute.
Yeah.
Some people are using the hashtag FeelTheBarn.
I like
the campaign.
I love that.
That's pretty good. I like that. So Rachel is a long-time journalist, reporter, news reporter on television here, and she's running for the 138th District State Assembly seat, the Democratic primary this fall. What's the election day?
September 13th is primary day.
Primary day.
And if I get through that, then I'll be in the general election in November. The primary is very important here because it is a majority Democrat district. It was drawn to be how they gerrymander things. It was drawn to be a district held by a Democrat. So it's very important that I get through the primary.
See, I don't really have a party allegiance. I've never had I just like, if I like the candidate, I like the candidate. And here's what I think is interesting about you, and I want to ask you about that. And people have compared you to Maggie Brooks and Rich Funky transitioning from a television personality to, and again, you are a personality, you are a brand, to a career in politics. When did all this start happening for you? And this is a big leap. Why
right.
do this?
Right, and as much as I really respect the careers of Rich Funky and Maggie Brooks, there are some big differences, I think, between us. For one, I'm a Democrat, they're Republicans, but also, you know, I was more of an advocacy journalist throughout my career. I did a lot of stories trying to solve problems, and they were news anchors for much of their careers. And I also left my career to do this. They were both retired when they decided to
get
into politics.
That's huge. That's a huge difference. To me, that's the biggest difference.
It's a big difference. So I grew up in Rochester. I'm a lifelong Democrat. And I'll tell you, even when I was 18 years old, I knew that in the city of Rochester, if you really want your vote to count, you need to be able to vote in primaries. Because I think that the Democrats outnumber everybody else by something like 6-1. It's really extreme. So the primary day in the city of Rochester is always, you know, the de facto election. And that's why I registered as a Democrat. But I am a Democrat. I'm a liberal. I am a liberal. I will admit it. And, you know, it's so funny. After 17 years of not being able to talk about what I really think, I can say whatever I want now about politics. And but anyway, about a year and a half ago, I was approached by some people who thought that this would be a really good fit for me and a good opportunity. But my contract ended in May last month. So as some people don't know, you cannot participate in politics when you are a journalist. You can't do that. It's very important.
I think that ended the career of someone that sits in the studio regularly in this area.
Oh, really?
I think Bob Lonsbury wanted to run for
right.
Office in Mount Morris, and the newspaper said you can't do that.
Yeah, I'm not one of the. I've always maintained a party affiliation. I'm not one of these people who thinks journalists need to be blanks. I think we're all citizens. We have the right to vote and be affiliated with a party. I do think voting in primaries in this country is important. So that's why, you know, I always maintained a party affiliation. But so I was approached about this a long time ago, and it was a very attractive thing to me because I always knew I wanted to get into politics one day. I kind of always knew that in my heart that I wanted to get into a different kind of public service. I do consider journalism to be a public service.
And a way to facilitate change, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I always knew that that would be a natural step for me, and I wasn't quite sure it would be now. But the more I thought about it and thought about what I wanted to accomplish in my life and my career and how I wanted to help the community, the more I thought about it, the time was right. The question for me personally was, do I want to run for office when I'm 40, I'm turning 40 in a few weeks, or when I'm 50? And to me, the answer was very clear. I have to do it now. And
why not?
Well, I felt that, especially with a lot of things changing in television and with, you know, I just felt that the timing just felt right to me, both personally and professionally. And also, if I do it now, no, half my life is now over. So maybe, who knows what's ahead?
Right.
And who knows what this next chapter and this next journey will bring? Do I want to wait? And I decided I didn't want to wait.
It's that funny how, cool. how the thought process has changed, I think, even in a decade or so. When I turned 30, I thought to myself, okay, there's things you want to do in life, you probably should start getting going on doing it because you could be half over. But now people are living longer, right? So 40, you think you're going to live till 80 or beyond. So, but no, I think it's great to get an earlier start on this.
Yeah.
Have a longer career.
And this is a big risk, by the way. It did take me some time, and I needed all the time. All the time I took, I needed to consider this and to plan for it because I don't have a backup plan. I had to leave my job to do this. I'm taking a big leap of faith. I don't have a backup plan. I felt that if the only thing I was scared of was losing, then that wasn't a good reason, and I needed to go ahead and do it. And I don't want to think about losing because I think that would paralyze me.
You won't lose. You're going to win. But the 13th is a primary. Let's say I've never voted before. What do I have to do to register to vote for this primary?
Well, as we saw in the presidential election, if you are not already a Democrat, you cannot vote for me on September 13th. If you are a new voter, if you've never registered to vote before, you can. Go to the Board of Elections, register to vote, and you can vote in a primary.
So I have to change my affiliation.
It's too late for you to change your affiliation.
It is.
It's too late. We found that out. New York State has some really strict rules, as we found out for people who wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders in the February primary. The April primary. It's impossible.
Because you have
to do it something like 6 months, or it was 6 months prior to that April. So you had to do it last fall, essentially, almost a year in advance of the general election the following year. So if you change your party affiliation right now, it wouldn't go into effect until after the November election. That's New York State for you. I do think there are some really great places where we can reform how we vote in this state. We don't allow early voting. We don't allow same-day registration. We make people change their parties way, way in advance. And I do think people should have to do it in advance because I think that, you know, primaries are supposed to be people in the party choosing. I think there's value in people who've been in the party for a little bit making that decision. But I'm not sure it needs to be so far in advance that, you know, I think that's a little unreasonable.
Rachel Barnhart in the studio, Word on the Street, brand new show here. Jeff DeVeronica from the Democrat and Chronicle sitting in here, and we're going to try to make this show interesting for you. Debo, I want to know from Rachel. You know, we know about, like, we're going to talk about her John Marshall High School. You went to high school in this area, Cornell University in this area. You've worked at two different radio TV stations in this area. But, Rachel, what is the job of the 138th Assembly District person? What do you do? What is your daily job going to be?
Sure. The New York State lawmakers, there are 150 assembly people, and then there is also a Senate. And in the assembly and in the Senate, you do actually make laws that affect people here in Rochester, whether it's economic development, education, you know, rules about taxes, etc. And I think that lawmakers also need to be more of a watchdog on the executive branch. I mean, that's remember, we were always taught the legislative branch watches the executive branch.
Yep.
And I think that's really important. I'm not sure that they do a good enough job doing that right now. That's certainly a role that I would like to take. But let's say that you have a problem with your state tax bill or something. You could call your local assembly person and they might be able to cut through some red tape for you. Let's say you have a problem with some state regulation opening a business. Perhaps you're a state assembly person, you call their office, they can help you out with that. So there's a lot of constituent services involved with being an assembly representative as well as just making laws and watching over the governor.
Would you have an office you go to every day?
Right.
You'd
have a local district office, but you'd also have an office in Albany. Our state assembly meets our state legislature.
Your office is right there. It's in next to your hand.
Right.
That phone is your office.
All right. Our state assembly meets 6 months out of the year for 4 or 5 days a week, and then they're off the other 6 months. We do have a part-time legislature, and there's a big debate right now about whether these lawmakers should earn outside income. Because some of them are lawyers, perhaps they have clients with business before the state. There's a lot of secrecy surrounding it. It's all part of the ethics. In fact, lawmakers just went home without passing really comprehensive ethics reform that would have taken a hard look at what their outside activities are. some people are pushing for a full-time legislature, giving them a pay raise. They make $79,000. So there's a lot of issues in play right now as to how our legislature should look. There's, you know, Jeff mentioned my social media presence. It is my goal to be the most accessible and transparent legislator in the state. That means everyone will have my number. Everyone will be able to contact me. I'll be all over this district. And as far as transparency goes, you always know what I'm doing. I'm not going to stop tweeting. You'll always know what I'm doing and what I'm up to.
You know, and
I like this guy. I like her. I'm going to vote right now.
And what I believe, what
you're
I believe,
not in my district.
What I believe that, you know, I don't think you're going to change your tune because you haven't changed it in this in this past life, and that's what I like about that I've seen in your career is that you're very stubborn. You're very determined, and you hold people accountable. And I think that's what everybody wants out of their elected officials.
Yeah, and I think that's my biggest asset. I'm not afraid. Obviously, I'm not afraid. I quit my job. That was a huge leap there. I'm not afraid to ask hard questions. I'm not afraid to push. I'm not, you know, I'm not afraid to push the boundaries. And I am running on a reform platform. I am running on a platform that Albany is, the system is broken. We can't fix it with the people who are there now. A lot of people are asking me, well, how are you going to get things done? No one's going to like you. No one's going to talk to you. I'm not going to go to Albany and be some tornado. I know how to forge relationships with people, and I do think people are going to listen to me, especially if I oust an incumbent, have a large social media following, and I'm respectful and ask for civil dialogue. I do think people will listen. And how about this? Let's just say no one listens to me. Let's just say I bang my head against the wall and nothing happens. Isn't that a little better than what's going on now? No one's trying at all.
No one's doing anything.
Right.
And, I think... You know, the question before us is, do we want status quo or do we want a new kind of legislator who is willing to really, really fight for Rochester in a different way and really, really try to push for reform? It starts with one, then two, then three, and then before you know it, all 150 people no longer feel afraid to buck the system.
How do you think, and I know, and we'll talk, I want to talk more about this after the first break, but I want to ask your opinions on how do we make life in Rochester better so we don't, I know you've talked about this extensively, mm-hmm. we don't see all these people moving away.
Right. I did a story maybe 4 or 5 months ago about looking at some latest census demographics on migration. This area between 2010 and I think 2014 or 15 lost 25,000 people, just moved away. That's almost the population of Chilai. Just up and moved out. If it weren't for new babies being born and immigrants moving into our community, our population would be in a free fall. It's much the same in many upstate New York cities. We have to focus on how do we make life better for people to stay here. And if you ask those people why they left, they're going to tell you taxes and jobs. Maybe mm-hmm. weather, but taxes and jobs. That's huge, huge, huge. We have to find a way to make life more affordable here for everyone, and we have to find a way to improve the business climate here for everyone. Right now, our state economic development policy is really to pick winners and losers. We bestow a lot of money on some companies and tax breaks on some companies, but not other companies. That has to stop. We have to figure out a way to make life more livable for everyone here.
I got to find out when we get back what district she's in so I know where to vote because I have several different homes. So I got to figure out where I got to like make sure I'm getting my mail for a
while. Which senior home do you go to?
Exactly.
Not yet.
Close. We'll be back here on the brand new show with the word on the street.
I'd like to see some 222-1280. If you want to talk to Rachel, you want to talk to us, we'd love to hear what you think about Rachel running for the 138th District Democratic in the Democratic primary. The state assembly. See, that's why I'm a sports reporter. I can't
get on. You got it. You did good.
No, but what she said. I mean, I have family all different parts of the country, and the taxes here are killers for us.
There's cranes everywhere. There's no cranes here. Nothing's going on.
You're right.
I mean, just we.
And if there's something going on, it takes like 10 years to figure out what we're going to do with it.
All those career politician people. They're let's face it, they're lazy. They're career politicians. That's what they do. You're someone that's like you wanna make a difference. You wanna make a change. You're Rachel Barnhart. You're not even 40 years old yet. You get it. You wanna make things better for this younger generation. For kids
keep,
like Soccer Santino.
Here. Yep.
Yeah.
It makes life better.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a break, come back. It's Word on the Street right here on Fox Sports 1280.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez with your Daily Dish. Orange is the new black fan. See you Monday.
How am I back here?
They got your number now, honey.
This is going to get interesting.
Season 4 debuted on Netflix overnight, so get your binge on.
Welcome to Let's Shield, mate.
Entertainment Weekly gives it a B. It says storylines that should have been resolved last season are still around, and the newbies, harder to cozy up to than the original crew.
Today's the day!
If the kids are around this weekend, duck into a theater for some Dory.
Migration is about going home.
Finding Dory opens today. The New York Times says it's the best non-Toy Story sequel Pixar has produced. And...
back up, man!
Whoa, Calvin, it's me, Bob.
There's Central Intelligence with Kevin Hart and The Rock with your Daily Dish. I'm Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Rich Eisen, Monday noon till 3 on Fox Sports 1280 Rochester.
It's on Fox Sports 1280.
We're back on Word on the Street. New show here. We're going to try to do this the whole summer. Myself and Soccer Sam. My name is Jeff DeVeronica. I write for the Democrat and Chronicle. I do videos. I do a lot of different things there. And Soccer Sam is Soccer Sam.
That's it.
And that may be the only sports thing that we talk about this hour is that your name is Soccer Sam.
That's it.
On Fox Sports 1280. In studio guest is Rachel Barnhart. She is running for the State Assembly, the 138th District, which is all of Henrietta.
All of Chilai.
Wait, all of Henrietta? That's like a city in itself.
Yeah, it's funny. The state doesn't break up the towns, but they really break up the city. If you look at a map of the 138th District Assembly seat, it is ridiculous. It is the most gerrymandered map. It goes through so many different city neighborhoods. So it goes through Henrietta and Chilai, and then it goes like a hook through the city. It has Highland, U of R, Cobbs Hill, Monroe Ave, Park Ave, a little bit of Neighborhood of the Arts. Then it swings up into my neighborhood of Beechwood, a little bit of North Winton. Then it goes down Clifford Avenue to the west and goes over the bridge, and then it has a whole bunch of the Lyle, Otis, Edgerton neighborhood. Isn't that a crazy district?
It's crazy, but you have no idea on what the areas you just mentioned, my involvement in those areas with businesses.
Nice.
So I think it's important that we have the right leaders in those areas. Chilai is the home of little guy soccer.
It is.
I mean, there's probably a lot of people still listening to the show. They just listen to the soccer show. Rachel Barnhart's
nice.
Coming at you.
I
if
am.
You're a Democrat, the primary is on the 13th. You got to register for
September. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to campaigning out in Chilai. I worked in Henrietta for many years. I think I'm very familiar with Henrietta. But I'm really, really, I've been very city. I grew up in the city. I live in the city. So I'm really looking forward to getting out to Henrietta and Chilai, learning a lot more about those communities and meeting all of the voters out there and telling them what I can do for them. And all I can ask is people listen. But I'm enjoying campaigning. I started off knocking on doors. I've only been doing this for 2 weeks, so, and let me tell you, it has been a whirlwind 2 weeks. You know, you have to open the campaign bank account, you have to start fundraising, you have to start petitioning. I need 500 signatures to get on the ballot.
Well, this is interesting. Ready?
What you get?
She had to have 500 signatures on a petition to
petitioning is still going on. What happens is, if you want to get on the ballot to run for office, you need a certain number of signatures. For New York State Assembly, I need the signatures of 500 registered Democrats. The only people who can witness those signatures have to be registered Democrats. Those registered Democrats who sign my petition have to live in the district. We've got our signatures, but we're going to keep going and get a lot more than 500. So it's very important, a very important process. It's a legal process. My opponent can challenge my signatures and say, you know, you didn't dot an I or cross a T. I mean, it's really that strict. So it's a very important process. When it became clear that I was going to leave my job and run for office, a number of people reached out to me on social media and said, I would like to help with your campaign. Because I didn't put a call out for volunteers or anything publicly. And I took down all their names and email addresses. I had a meeting at my house on Sunday, July 3rd that morning, because petitioning started that Tuesday. And all these people showed up to my house that I only knew from Twitter. And none of us had ever worked on a campaign before. Not one of us.
Wow.
And they all... almost all of them were registered Democrats already, so that wasn't a problem. And we took a little course on how to pass petitions. and they went crazy. And I have this one guy who is a retired...
Like, how many people, all these people?
There were about 20 people in my living room.
Wow.
And many of them are still passing petitions. And I have this one retired Rochester City School teacher who... he's a monster. I think he's going to get 100 on his own. He's still going. And maybe he knocked on your door already. And another young man told me that he heard me on Bob Lonsberry, and he was looking for a campaign to get involved in. And he said I inspired him, and he's now passing petitions for me. And just all these little stories and all these people whom I've met, it's been absolutely incredible. You cannot do this alone. You can't run for office alone. I don't know. It is a huge, huge undertaking. The fundraising alone.
See, even what she just said, some of the politicians, it's more about all about, it's like an ego trip. It's all about me, 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 me. Here
this
she is
a
saying
humbling,
this is,
and this is a very humbling experience.
But to hear these people that want to help you, how
it's
validation
wonderful.
It must feel.
It's really, really wonderful. And I had my first fundraiser a couple days ago at Two Vine, and when someone hands you a $1,000 check, it's. Let me tell you, it's weird. I have never had that happen to me before. Well, now I have to get used to it. And I can use more of those, by the way. I'm really the underdog here. I don't have any money. I don't have. I haven't had the luxury. Incumbents in Albany have a ton of money. I don't have any money. I'm just, you know, we've had 2 weeks to get this thing off the ground. So far,
what's
so good.
What's the deadline for petitions?
In July 11th, I think, is when you have to get the signatures by. So there's time. Well, we hit the ground running. And one of the reasons we did is because if I get your signature before the other guy, he can't have it. If you sign my petition first, the other people can't have it. So there's a lot of strategy involved in that, but it's been really fun. But it's a very humbling experience because there are some people extremely unhappy that I'm running for office. They wish I was running for a different office or wish, you know, and they're just not happy. And I've had to, you know, answer phone calls. But what I'm finding is this. And this is a minority, by the way, a small minority of people. But what I'm finding is this. If I just say to them, can we meet for coffee? Why don't we just talk? And, you know, you can learn about me and I can hear your concerns. A lot of times they go away. And a lot of times they want to meet. And so yesterday I had 3 meetings yesterday. And I met with people who don't support me. They support my opponent. But they had, by the end of the meeting, I know they liked me. And I know I kind of put them in an awkward spot because I know they liked me. They had excellent advice for me. And the questions they asked me kept me on my game. You know,
can you share some of them?
You know, why this race? Why are you running? What are you going to do for us? How can you run on a reform platform? And how can you change anything in Albany? Those kinds of questions, real tough questions that I need to... that I've been, you know, really have to perfect my answers to. I've been doing this for only a couple of weeks. So,
right.
But those things are really important, and I know I'll stay in touch with those people. But it's, and one of the things that was hard too was a lot of people who didn't want me to run accused me of being ambitious. And, you know, I find that very sexist. Do people ask men when they run for office, oh, you're just being ambitious? Well, ambition should be a good thing. And I gave up something. I made a sacrifice to do this. So, call it what you want. But that was hard. And I think it's a question when it's asked in an accusatory way that's meant to diminish me and somehow say that I'm not qualified. I am qualified. I've covered this area for a very, very long time. I know a lot about this region. I know a lot about state government. And I know that I can represent this area very, very well. So, anyway, these are the things that have been going on in 2 weeks. It's just so much. Every day has been an adventure.
Rachel Barnhart. Rachel, I got to tell you a quick story. Diva, listen up here. So I have this soccer team. It's my love and joy. You're one of the few people, well, both of you are one of the few people that supported the team. Not supported financially,
sure.
But you did your part to cover us. You interviewed us and all
How
that stuff.
How many stories did I do on the future of soccer?
You still do.
But, I had a situation where the New York State Insurance Fund, which in my opinion is a corrupt fund, that our local governor handles the fund.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And they basically not doubled our rate. Our rate went from 20,000.
The workers' comp,
workman's
right?
Workman's comp went from 20,000 a year to 200,000 a year. And I did everything I could to reach out to local politicians, and no one
helped you.
No one helped me except for one guy, but it was after I already decided to fold the team. It was Rich Funke. He was the only guy that actually got back to me with a nice letter, and he showed me the letter. He sent me a copy of the letter that he sent to the governor and how important this team was to kids and families and to our region and rah, rah, rah. But no one else supported me. So I was considering getting into politics.
Wow.
And I met with Jamie Romeo several times. And they kind of gave me a direction of what they wanted me to run for. And when I kind of looked at who my opponent was, and I studied what he did, I thought, you know, he was doing an okay job, and it wasn't someone that that I wanted to go against. My question to you, you know, it's a long story here, but my question to you, is there something that made you say, hey, you know, you mentioned, you know, half your life you're going to be 40, but what was that decision that said, I want to get into politics, I need to do this now, something's upsetting you about something that's going on in this community?
Right. So for many years now, I get very annoyed with politicians that are not responsive to the media and not responsive to the public and that don't push back against really bad policies. Governor Cuomo, for all of the things that he has done that have been wonderful, such as marriage equality, you know, raising the minimum wage, paid family leave, I support all of those things. He does other things that I think hurt Rochester. And our local delegation hasn't really stood up to him on those things. For example, the Buffalo Billion. Where were our local lawmakers standing up and saying, hey, where's our cut?
Yeah.
And now, of course, that program is under federal investigation. This idea that we have to compete for economic development funds every year, most recently for $500 million. Okay, it's nice that we won, but that we should not have to compete for that kind of money. The governor coming to town, having rallies, saying that the state economy is on the upswing. You may recall, but right before I left, I asked the governor on camera, well, how can you have a rally saying everything's great when we have 40,000 fewer people working in Rochester than we did at its peak? And he called me a cynic.
Facts. You're dealing with facts.
He called me a cynic and said, well, we're all going to die one day and it's cold outside. I mean, he was trying to make a joke, but it wasn't funny to me. And where were our local lawmakers saying, you know, Gov, this isn't correct? Another thing is, you know, these education policies that Cuomo, these anti-teacher education policies that Cuomo rammed down everyone's throats that he's now walking back because they were so unpopular, you know, that led to all these parents opting their kids out of testing. I'm in favor of standards. I'm in favor of having high standards for students. But the way this was done was totally wrong, and it was very anti-teacher. And where were our local lawmakers standing up for that? So I will not be that kind of lawmaker who is just silent and goes along to get along. We need to ask tough questions.
Love this girl.
I just don't want you to change because I know
don't
sometimes
change.
Politicians change.
No, and I understand.
If I had a yearbook now, I'd say, hey, Rachel, it's been great getting to know you the last several years as a colleague in the news business. Please never change. That's what they're saying.
And I understand that. I understand that we always need compromise. I understand that getting things done requires relationships. When I say I'm going to push back, it doesn't mean I'm going to be an obstructionist or anything like that. That's not what I mean. But sometimes just using your voice and standing up and saying, you know, this isn't right is important. And that's the kind of lawmaker that I want to be. I want to be a watchdog lawmaker. I want to be a problem solver. I also want to get a lot of experts together on some of our major, major problems in this area, particularly as it comes to jobs and taxes, come up with some really interesting solutions. I can't sit here and tell you I have all the solutions. I don't. But I believe that where there is a will, there is a way, and I don't think we're trying hard enough.
And
I just don't.
She also has a way to go find people that have answers. And she's interviewed them for years, and now she wants to work with them to solve problems. And to me, that's the biggest job of a politician is to be a problem solver. And I think in your work, you've been trying to do that and make life better. And if someone's doing something wrong, Rachel will go find out what that is.
You know, I've just been frustrated for so many years at especially since Governor Cuomo took office, you know, just some of his policy. I've just been so frustrated that people haven't stood up and said, come on. I was a big fan of Zephyr Teachout, you know, the woman who ran against him in a primary the last time. I just thought she was great because she pushed back on some of this stuff, and I thought it was terrific.
Hey, let's take break number two. We're going to talk more with Rachel Barnhart on the other side. We welcome your phone calls, 222-1280. This is called Word on the Street, topical, controversial. I want to ask her, actually, about the soccer stadium and the politics that went involved in where that stadium got built and what may have happened if it wasn't built there. Rachel and I have talked informally about this for years. I want to see what she thinks about, I don't know, there's one politician in town I'm really not a big fan of. I'm not even going to mention him by name, but we'll get into it on the other side. So if you are a soccer fan, you want to hear some soccer talk and about the future of soccer here in the past, stay tuned. You're listening to Fox Sports 1280.
The stars of the Netflix original show Orange is the New Black hit the red carpet in New York for the premiere of the series' fourth season. The popular show explores life in a women's prison. This season, new inmates will be introduced as the prison undergoes an unprecedented culture war.
Piper goes through a lot this season, and I think she's having to deal with the consequences of her actions.
The fourth season of Orange is the New Black premieres today on Netflix. We're getting our first look inside the new Big Brother house. This season's theme is the craziest summer vacation ever. The living room is decked out like an airport terminal, and other rooms are decorated to represent cities around the world. The house also has dozens of high-definition cameras and microphones to record the house guests' every move. Big Brother begins its 18th season, June 22nd, right here on CBS. And the smash Broadway musical Wicked is heading to the big screen. The popular show tells the story of the Witches of Oz before Dorothy came to town. The musical has made more than $1 billion in ticket sales since it opened 13 years ago. Wicked, the movie, is expected to hit theaters in December of 2019. That's your Eye on Entertainment. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Los Angeles.
1280 Rochester.
We're back on Fox Sports 1280. It's called Word on the Street. My name is Jeff DeVeronica with Democrat and Chronicle alongside Soccer Sam. We're going to be here every Saturday this summer. Maybe not every Saturday, Sam. I do like some time off in the summer.
No time off, Devo. You got to be like a new wave politician. 16-hour days, 7 days a week. That's how hard Rachel's going to work, like you're supposed to work. Not a couple hours a day, go golfing, go get drunk at lunchtime, and then call yourself a politician. She's going to work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and make a difference in this community.
I've said for many years, Rachel Barnhart is our guest. She's running for state assembly this fall. And I've said for many years, if I could just convince the people at the newspaper that I work 24-7, they'd pay me that way. That'd be great. No, and I'm only joking. But in a way, and Rachel knows this, today's journalist is kind of, I feel like a doctor at times where I'm always on call. And that's the life I've chosen. That's the profession I've chosen. And I tell this to kids nowadays, and Rachel, I know you've talked about the future of journalism and what could happen when we lose the context that veteran journalists provide.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that first?
We can talk about that. And then we'll talk about the soccer stadium.
When I left Channel 8, I did write a lot about. I wrote a blog about it and I gave a speech about it. I'm very concerned about the future of journalism in Rochester. We have some really wonderful people writing and on television here and on the radio. But consider the fact that when I was 25, I was earning $40,000 a year at a station in Rochester. I had 25-year-old colleagues making $30,000 a year when I left Channel 8. Think about that for a moment. That's a dramatic loss in wages. If the salary had kept pace with inflation, I think it would be above $50,000. The consequence of this is very real. It means that young people starting out in the business here in Rochester won't be able to stay. Even if they want to stay, they won't be able to stay because they won't be able to make a living.
It's somewhat similar to what happens for our local sports teams that they train kids to work and get to do the apprenticeship here with our minor league teams, and then they go to bigger markets and bigger teams and make more money. One of the great successes for the Red Wings is they keep a really solid core in their front office, people that have been there 10, 12, 14 years. And that's the way you build relationships, by keeping things intact.
Right.
So our local teams, our local TV, our local media,
right.
If you don't keep these good young people
right.
here, eventually it'll become a revolving door.
We know that other industries have seen wages fall. We know that household income as a whole in Monroe County has fallen when adjusted for inflation. But there is a special, unique consequence when you're talking about journalism, and that consequence is, you know, these people won't have institutional knowledge. They won't know what questions to ask of politicians. They won't be able to seize opportunities to ask questions about, well, you know, a long time ago you said this, and now you're doing this.
Right. So the Gary Craigs and the Steve Orrs, the guys that are on our watchdog
team, they're
going to
retire. They'll be retiring. My generation, Generation X, is going to, you know, be moving on one by one. And we need to ask ourselves what if that's just, it's just not acceptable. I was spending an enormous amount of time really mentoring my young colleagues at Channel 8 before I left. They're wonderful people, and I had mentors. I used to be in their shoes, and this is not a knock against them. They are so they all have really, really bright futures ahead of them. But it makes me sad that those futures might not be here. I don't know how it could be here if they're not paid more.
Mm-hmm. The next Rachel Barnhart won't stay here. She'll go somewhere
else. There will be another Rachel Barnhart because I was doing okay for myself, but I'm sure when I left, then they didn't want me to leave, and they made me a nice offer to stay. But I'm sure when I left, that salary, that's gone. It's gone forever. Gone forever.
Rachel, how long is the term when you win?
2 years.
It's a two-year term.
Yeah, and one of the things that...
Does that concern you? Because that's
you're always running for re-election.
Yeah, that's what kind of why I didn't do what I was going to do.
Because you're always running.
You're always running because it's such a short term.
And especially in the Senate side.
So there's no tenure, there's no guaranteed contract.
I thought like maybe 4 years you get a little chance to breathe, but two years you're...
Some people were asking me too, why didn't you run against Rich Funky? Why didn't you go on the Senate side? I said, that's really difficult, especially in the Senate. Those races cost $1 million. They are enormously expensive and nasty, and you can't run clean campaigns. It's just really, really hard on the Senate side. On the Assembly side, it's a little easier, especially in a primary. But one of the reforms that, has been talked about is perhaps going to a four-year term, raising their salary, making it full-time. Of course, people say, don't raise the salary of, lawmakers. They don't deserve it. They're, they're bums. They're not doing good work. But there are reasons to do it, and one of them is that we've had so many of them arrested on corruption charges trying to make money on the side. For those guys in New York City, for me, $80,000, that would be great. It would be more. That was more money than I was making at Channel 8. $80,000, you can live off of that. It's fine. But for a lot of these guys, especially in New York City, that doesn't go as far as they would like. And a lot of these lawmakers have outside income. They're all lawyers. My opponent's a lawyer. They all have outside income. They make money on the side. We don't know who their clients are. We don't know if there are any conflicts. And it's very difficult
to monitor,
to keep it all clean.
Right.
It's very difficult. So there are some proposals that would clean it up. And I'm very open to those kinds of proposals.
Is a Blue Cross Arena in your district?
No, downtown is not in my district. I've been reading all about the upgrades needed there. There are upgrades needed at the convention center. The city of Rochester is at a really unique moment in time here where they have tremendous infrastructure needs for those publicly owned facilities, and they're going to need a lot of state help.
Yeah.
And I know that the state delegation just delivered $10 million to the city. We still don't know how they're going to spend it at Blue Cross Arena. This is really important stuff, and it's just really important.
And my employer was very adamant about staying in the city. When the Democratic Chronicle moved, we wanted to be part of the heartbeat
growth
of the city.
Right.
And now that right across the street, these beautiful condos are building, the old Sibley building is going to be turned into some really cool housing. And there's a lot of housing downtown.
You need a Wegmans. You need a food place. That's what I hear from everyone.
Downtown's at a tipping point. I think one of the most encouraging signs for downtown Rochester is this. That Main and Clinton corner, that Renaissance Square block, that one corner that just looks really yucky. The private marketplace is now coming in and going to fix it up. There are developers that are buying up those buildings, and they're going to fix them up. That is a sign right there that the private marketplace has spoken. Downtown, it's on its way up. There are so many wonderful housing projects going on. I'm not worried about downtown. I'm not even worried about Parcel 5 where, the mayor wants to put her casino. I'm not even worried about that. It'll all shake out. I think downtown is going gangbusters. We have problems on other parts of the city that we need to address.
Being that Jeff and I are kind of involved in soccer, is the arena, the stadium?
Yes.
Is that in your district?
You know what? I think it. If it's not in the district, see, this district is so gerrymandered.
Because Lyle is kind of like borderline.
The district stops on the northern side of Lyle Avenue, so the southern side of Lyle Avenue is not in the district.
So
it's not, but the stadium's right outside.
Boy, it's really close.
And I'm telling you, everyone I know lives two houses outside my district, across the street from the district. It's just so gerrymandered. It's just kind of a mess.
Here's what I was going to say, I mentioned this before the break, is that what I didn't like was there was one local politician that basically said, unless you put the stadium in my district, I'm not going to support you getting $50 million from the state of New York for this stadium. And what I didn't like was, and this is what I think you can do, is no one spoke up against that. No one publicly ever said, that's wrong. We need to have a more of a public discourse as to how and where the best spot for success this is. And I'm not saying, at the time, I loved the fact that it was going to be right next to Frontier Field. But I don't think our suburbanites feel that's a good area, and I can say that I think they're wrong.
I disagree with you.
Perception is now reality.
I disagree with you.
Well, it wasn't just It wasn't just one politician back then. I mean,
But you'll start the conversation. That's
my point. No, I know. I mean, yeah, David Gant, he did demand that that the stadium be put in the city. But, you know, it was the Johnson administration, I believe, that identified that site. It was Mike Nozzolio that was really pushing for this. And, you know, he got a lot of money from and campaign contributions from DeRoss and the Rhinos group. And, you know, it was the three of them. It was Nozzolio, Gant, and Johnson that cooked up this deal. So, Gant was stubborn about it, and he said, yeah, you gotta put it in the city. You got to employ minority workforce. He definitely played a role in it, but I don't believe that he selected that site. It was just one of those things where they wanted it. Every site they picked, there was a problem. I think it was Brown Square. There was a problem with the soil. Everywhere they picked, there was a problem. And they settled on this one. It ended up being extremely controversial. And, you know, all these years later, I think it's sad that people don't like the location. I'm not a big soccer fan, so I don't go to games. But
what do
I
you mean?
I don't go to any sports games that much, but I understand that that the stadium itself needed some improvements.
They're doing that. I've said for years with Jeff that it's the location of the stadium. I went there last night with my wife. We felt 100% safe.
Yeah.
We got in. It was beautiful. But the stadium itself, the design of the stadium, needs some serious tweaking.
You're talking the seats. Be able to move around.
You can't move around. The concession. And just the feel. If you're a Bills fan or you're a Sabres fan, walking into the Bills stadium, walking into the wherever the Sabres play now, it's a whole different feel. And like I told you, I had OCD really bad. That's really what it is. I mean, you can't even get up to go to the bathroom. There's no room. The seats don't flip up. So that we need to find some money to upgrade the seating for the stadium, and I think a lot of things will change. But back to Rachel, we talked about things you could do in this community. My opinion, the reason I wanted to get into politics, all this crime that's going on. Mm-hmm. We hear about all the crime situation, all the shootings. If you're a young kid, no matter where you live, if there's no jobs, you get bored. And if you're not into sports, there's boredom happens and things happen. How do we bring jobs to the city? How do we bring jobs back? What could you do to help make that happen?
In the city, right?
Right. I mean, we have a huge problem with the disconnected youth. These are youth that are not in school and they don't have a job. And that the numbers, especially in the city and among minority communities, are really staggering. I don't have them right in front of me, but I've written about this before. And we need to find a way to reconnect them. Job training programs, schools, we have to. And the city school district is a huge problem and a huge issue in this. We're not doing a very good job in educating our kids. I think we have to figure out a way to get businesses to invest in the city. The strategy employed by the state right now is to throw money at a lot of businesses, you know, grants, tax breaks, you know, Startup New York. But it's not producing real jobs here. It just isn't. So I believe we have to make the business climate better for everyone. We just have to figure out a way to lower tax. I sound like a Republican. Lower the taxes and figure out a way to make life a lot easier for businesses and families to live here. But I think that the solution, one of the solutions to the crime problem, is to get youth more connected into society. That will come with improving our schools. On the crime issue, we had those high profile parole incidents, and on the Democratic side of the aisle, at least, you know, some people were very quiet about that. I won't be quiet about it. Some of these incidents had something in common: people released from prison and put in homeless shelters. It just wasn't. It's not a good system. We know they have to be released. I don't have a problem with that, but when they come to this community, there have to be more safeguards.
It's Rachel Barnard. She's got a lot of ideas, great ideas, and I know a work ethic that doesn't quit. We'll talk to her more on the
driven,
other side.
Driven, intelligent, young. She's got it all going for her. I can't wait to vote. I never voted
Soccer
before.
Sam is here, and we'll take our last break and back. Talk more with Rachel Barnard. You're listening to Word on the Street on Fox Sports 1280.
Robert Rosario, there are a lot of things that are complicated in this life, but buying a car or leasing a car shouldn't be one of them. You need to get the Fusillo Hyundai.
It isn't here at Fusillo Hyundai. Tom, it's simple. You can lease a 2016 Sonata SE for only $249 a month, and that is a vehicle that was rated by Kelley Blue Book as the top 16 best family car.
Absolutely, folks, and it's at a very affordable price, including a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty at Fusillo Hyundai on West Ridge Road in Greece, where it's simply
Rochester huge.
MSRP 22.7. 36-month, 30,000-mile lease. 10,000 miles per year. 20 cents per mile over limit. 8% tax. First monthly payment of $249 plus DMV fees due at signing. Monthly payment plus $595 acquisition fee and tax and tags included in payment structure. No disposition fee. $400 early termination fee. No security deposit required. $2,750 HMF lease cash applied. Offer with approved credit through Hyundai Motor Finance. Prior sales excluded. See dealer for details. Pricing available June 1st, 2016 through June 30th, 2016.
Hey, it's Joe DeMonaco for Quality Homes of Rochester. Not all home improvement companies are the same. Some may not have been in business long, they don't have any experience. Some may have these great low prices, but you wonder about the quality of the materials they use, and some you just don't trust. Well, Quality Homes of Rochester reminds you to be sure you're comparing apples with apples when it comes to choosing a home improvement company. Take a checklist with you. What gets a good check? Years of experience. Quality Homes has a
We're back on Word on the Street, our final segment. My name's Jeff DeBaronic. I write for the Democratic Chronicle. His name's Soccer Sam. He does everything.
Hi.
And in-studio guest is Rachel Barnhart. She's running for State Assembly this fall, 138th District. And it's funny, like, no one knows what that number is. Henrietta, Chi Lai, and part of the city. Mm-hmm. So it's like the Super Bowl number when they used to have the Roman numerals. So, Rachel, Sam just brought up a point off-air.
What?
Legalization of marijuana. That was interesting. I'm a little surprised by that. But
I didn't ask you that.
Yeah, I am. I've been asked by some people on the campaign trail already what I feel about it. I am in favor of full legalization of marijuana.
Why?
That being because it's right now. There's no reason for it to be underground. People are smoking. I know so many people who smoke it anyway. Having it underground leads to crime. It leads to the mass incarceration problem that we have. There's no need for it.
And legalizing it would create jobs.
It could. That's not why I'm in favor of it. It's more because I just believe that it would make our community actually safer if we legalized it. But I do want to say this, though. I am not in favor of smoking marijuana. I think people who do it I think they're hurting their brain cells. I think they're hurting their lungs. Yeah. I am not in favor of smoking marijuana. That being said, if you want
to would be a good candidate for the position. However, I just have a question. I am a bachelor's student in the city of Rochester, and I am going to graduate in a couple of weeks with my bachelor's degree. I'm planning on moving out of Rochester because there's no jobs here to help me like pay off my student loans, support my family. Mm-hmm. So what is she planning on doing about that?
Right. What field are you in? Do you mind me asking?
I'm getting my bachelor's in criminal justice systems with a minor in juvenile justice.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we have to do a better job making our economy tick and grow. And I hope to develop some very specific policy proposals as we move forward in this campaign. But I know this. I know that we need to bring experts around the table, and we need to really, really take a hard look at what the trends are in our community as far as employment go. And we need to get the experts around the table and come up with some better ideas than the state is implementing right now. I do believe that high taxes are a problem for our community, and I don't see a reason why we can't figure out a way to, instead of piecemeal doing rebate checks here and lowering taxes for a very small group of people and awarding grants to very small numbers of businesses, I don't see a reason why we can't figure out a way to find a way to help everyone in this situation. Thank you very much for the encouragement. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Well, good luck. Congrats on the looming graduation. That's awesome. You mentioned something about the city school district, and you're a product of that. And I think from what I've heard from people, and I get people, it's the schools. I've heard from a lot of people that we can't just blame the schools.
No.
We have to blame the parents.
No. Well, I'll say this. I am a product of the Rochester City School District. My parents are retired from the Rochester City School District. I'm a huge supporter of public education. Our schools right now, there's no urban district in the nation that is really successfully tackling the problem of high concentrations of poverty. Our schools are overwhelmed. There was a story in the Democratic Chronicle today about the special ed program in the city school district that's completely not serving children. Our schools are overwhelmed, and we spend a lot of money, but maybe it's not being spent in the right way. Our students and our families need support. You know, I don't like the idea of blaming parents and families. I'll tell you why. My mother always used to say she never met a parent who didn't love their child. The parents love their children. Any parent will tell you they want their children to succeed. But there is a disconnect sometimes between how do you implement that. You got to send your children to school. You know, there's a lot of things that you have to do. But we shouldn't blame parents. We should help them. And we should help families help their children succeed. And we're just not doing that right now. You can't just blame parents. That's not going to solve this issue. And our schools do need help, and they need help in the right way. They need to spend resources in the right way to help families that are struggling.
But schools can't make kids go to school. Parents do that.
That's correct. However, I give former Superintendent Bolhan Vargas a tremendous amount of credit for focusing public attention on the issue of attendance. And he did have some real common sense efforts to help families and help our schools succeed. But it is a huge task. And I don't think that blaming is going to work here. We need to just focus on solving.
Exactly 2 years ago, I wrote a story on parents and coaches and how in high school sports now parents really get after coaches for playing time and my kid's not getting his fair share.
That was a great story.
All right, and so I got focused a lot on the suburbs. And I got an email from someone in the city that said, you know what you ought to do, Jeff? You should do a story on how the people I live around in the city, a lot of those parents don't care about their kids' sports games. They don't go. They don't attend.
Is it because they're working much?
Exactly.
Is it because their lives are in chaos? You know, a lot of families are homeless. They sleep on couches or they're with their brothers, sisters, friends. They're living. You know, our children face they face trauma. A lot of them are truly traumatized, and a lot of them have a lot of problems that are not being addressed. And that's why I don't think blaming is healthy.
I don't disagree they need help, but I do think self accountability needs to take place too.
And that's fine. Okay. That's totally fine. But I think as far as the role of government is concerned, we have to focus on actual concrete ways that we can help families solve those problems, and that would be my focus. But as a lawmaker, it's not going to do anyone any good if I stand up and try to blame people.
No, find out from parents what they need.
Right.
To be better parents to their kids.
Monday, Elaine Spall, she contacted me about a week ago about visiting 33 School, which
I live right there. I live two blocks away.
I went to kindergarten there.
No way.
And she's like, hey, I'm going there. There's a classroom that did something really special, and so we're bringing some pizza, but. When I was with the Lancers, we would go to all these schools,
in
a lot of these city schools, and it's amazing on how wonderful the teachers are, the connection the students. There's something special there. Mm-hmm. You just feel the love that these teachers give these kids.
That's why I absolutely can't stand blaming the teachers for the state of our schools. I don't like it. I had wonderful teachers in the city school district. It's not the issue. Our schools are just simply overwhelmed with society problems right now, and we're not doing a good job in giving them support.
Primary, September
13th. Yep.
Democratic primary, Rachel Barnhart. We have to vote. Chilai, Henrietta.
And a big part of the city. And you can find me on social media and find me online, rachelforassembly.com. And I just want the conversation to continue.
That's what I like about it. You're gonna raise the question and make sure we're talking about it. So thanks for coming in studio and being our first guest. We appreciate it. Sam, thank you.
It's been fun, kind of. I'm learning. This is good because, I need to relearn because of my new life.
Yep.
This is a great learning experience for me, this show.
I still have to explain to a lot of people. I'm like, it really happened. He couldn't remember anything. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, it's a big story. It wasn't a fake story. It was true.
Well, I'm glad you remembered me, Sam.
Yeah.
thanks again. And
thank
you
guys so much.
Rachel Barnhart.
We have to legally, I think we have to at least say that her opponent wants to come talk to us, get in touch with us.
I don't think you do.
Yeah, well,
it's a paid hour.
We just did.
Do whatever we want.
Thanks for listening to Word on the Street. Have a great weekend, folks. Enjoy the weather.
Morning comes and you know that you want to stay. Close the blinds, let's pretend that the time has changed.